Welcome to Mindful Social, the show that intersects mindfulness and emotional intelligence with the hectic online world we live in today. This week on Mindful Social, we've got Oren J. Sofer back again, and this time with his book, Your Heart Was Made for This. This book is really great. It brings in so much information from teachers throughout the centuries, as well as Oren's personal experience. And it's really designed to pull what you need out of this book and take it to heart. Have a listen. Welcome, Oren. You know, I so appreciated Say What You Mean, and I was so glad that you came on the show, and here you are again, and I'm so excited to talk about the new book.
Thanks. Yeah, I'm really grateful to have the opportunity to be here and connect again.
Thank you. You know, it pulls in a lot from the great teachers of ancient history, current history, your history. There's so much in this book. And what I love about it is that you made it very relatable. That the stories that weave in about you kayaking in Quebec and having a baby and Lyme disease and so many things that are very deeply personal things to individuals that we can then relate with. So this isn't one of those books where, okay, the Buddha said this, and this is what we're going to do, and you're going to be fine in 5 minutes. This is not that book.
No.
Am I right?
Yes, you're right, because it never works that way. It's, you know, I was saying to you earlier before we started recording, just that this book pushed me to my edges in a lot of ways, both intellectually, you know, as you acknowledge, there's a lot of breadth and depth in the book in terms of what I'm drawing from. I consulted with a friend and colleague of mine who's a nonviolence scholar to bring in examples from history for how our contemplative practice connects to social change. But it also really pushed my edges personally. And one of the ways that I've been conditioned as a white, straight male in this world and the West is very much to present with that image of I've got it all together and everything's okay and I'm in control. And that's been a huge part of my own growth just as a human being, you know, to sort of realize how much pain holding on to that creates inside and disconnecting myself from the very messy parts of being alive. And so I stretched to really include stories about, just being real. You know, I tell that one story, I think in the chapter on compassion, about being in a grocery store, it happened to be in Los Angeles, and losing control of my bowels because of the chronic digestive condition I was struggling with at the time. And, you know, how mortified I was, but also how important that experience was in helping me learn how to be kind to myself and be more compassionate and start to actually reach out and get help instead of trying to do it all on my own.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, you know, we all try to think that everybody's watching us and judging us in every moment. And really it's us that's doing the judging.
Yeah. And I hope I haven't alienated anyone by using that somewhat graphic story as the first example of our conversation. It's like, oh, where is this going?
It's going someplace good, people. It's going someplace good. And, you know, it's really, it's reality. And we're dealing with so much in our lives right now.
Yeah.
And in this world. And we really, I say this too much, but I really believe that we're all in some stage of PTSD because there's so much trauma and so much going on that we don't acknowledge.
Yeah, absolutely.
And, you know, that's part of, you know, many of the things that I gained from the book was, okay, so there are ways that we can be dealing with this and allow ourselves to see it and let it touch us without recoiling and running away into our cave.
Right. Or burying our head in the sand, or the opposite of trying to help everyone and everything and running around the world like, you know, a crazy person, burning out.
Mm-hmm.
So I talk a lot in the book about the ways that we can nourish ourselves. There's a chapter on rest. There's a chapter on ease. There's a chapter on joy. There's a chapter on play. And we need all of these beautiful, energizing qualities, gratitude, in order to be able to open to the pain and the overwhelm and the rage and the confusion of everything that's happening around us, that we can feel so helpless to change. And in the, I think it's the first chapter of the book where I talk about wise attention and kind of lay out some of the foundational concepts of the book in terms of how we're wired and how we can actually train our heart and mind so that every day we're growing stronger. I talk a little bit about trauma-informed practice and what are the things that we can do to make sure that we are learning and living in a way that is not only avoiding further harm to ourselves and others, but actually growing. And so there are three main principles I talk about. I'll just mention them briefly. One is to start small. Actually, even before that, I think the first principle is to start as much as possible from a place of feeling relatively safe and oriented. Mm-hmm. So we need to look towards the parts of ourself and our life where we actually feel okay. And I offer some simple tools to do that, such as orienting, connecting to your environment, you know, just through looking around or seeing, starting from our wholeness, starting from a place where we feel okay. And sometimes it's a lot of work just to get there.
Right.
You know, and that might be a whole phase of our practice of just learning how to notice and stabilize ourselves in the parts that feel okay enough. And then from there, the second principle is to start small, this concept in trauma healing of titrating, of taking just a little bit at a time, you know, not taking on too much, working within our right range. And then the third principle of moving back and forth organically between things that are nourishing and things that are difficult or challenging. And this is kind of the natural way that our nervous system heals. And so those principles kind of weave through the book.
Yeah, I think all of those are so important. And, you know, what we're seeing a lot, or what I'm seeing a lot in the culture right now, is that we are gravitating towards one end of the spectrum or the other. We're either mm-hmm. in total trauma and crawling into our cave and in denial, mm-hmm. or maybe we're finding what nurtures us and sticking with that. And eventually that gets old. Now what do we do?
Mm-hmm.
You know, that that isolation. And one of the things that I really, really enjoyed is a quote that was really about getting people together and that mm-hmm. deeper desire for human connection and healing. Mm-hmm. And I think that that is absolutely huge, that we've stepped back from that connection to humanity a bit, because we're othering everybody.
Yeah.
You wrote this: without training, we're reactive, acting as though we have no choice because we've become victims.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that we do that, and sometimes we get lucky and we stop running. And then we realize that we can begin to thrive.
Hmm.
As long as we can bring some focus to the good things that you just mentioned, you know, those moments of peace, those glimmers of hope, those small things that we can see around us.
Yeah.
And then that way we get grounded with what's real as opposed to what we're running from.
Yeah. Yeah. I appreciate what you're pointing to there. And I think it's natural. There's this, as human beings, we long for stability and predictability. And we need that. We need some sense of order and a feeling that things are holding together. And so much of what's happening on the world stage around us, if not in our personal lives, is telling a different story, is saying that things are falling apart. You can't breathe the air, you can't drink the water. So this tendency to view things in an either or context, right? Either everything is terrible or everything is fine. And we see this, we see the polarization on the political stage where the narrative becomes very rudimentary. Either you're right or you're wrong. Either you're this or you're that. Either everything is great and we've made tremendous progress as a human species, and anything to the contrary, is a lie. Or the world is falling apart and there's no hope and, we're all going to die.
Mm-hmm.
I'm exaggerating a little bit, but if we look closely and we start to examine the narratives that are there in the social sphere, we see this in so many domains, is this very binary way of looking at things. And one of the things that I'm trying to do in the book, with all of the different qualities I talk about and our practice, is to support us to be more nuanced and to recognize that life is rarely one thing or the other. And it's often complicated and there are gray zones. And so, for example, when I talk about gratitude, I talk about how a true practice of gratitude doesn't disconnect us from the grief or the pain or the suffering in our lives or the world. It actually opens us to it more fully, because to appreciate what's present reminds us of what's absent.
Mm.
And if we don't look carefully at the way we're living and the way we're training ourselves, and I'll come back to that in a moment, it's very easy to fall into this pattern of one or the other and limit our potential to one, experience the fullness and the richness of being alive. And two, limit our potential to really be effective as parents, as partners, as teachers and caregivers, as citizens. Because when we view things in this either or, we're not seeing the full picture,
mm-hmm.
and so we don't have all of the information and aren't able to engage and respond in the most clear and effective way. I want to come back to this thing I said, how we're training ourselves, and what do I mean by that? Because this is kind of one of the core messages of the book and the whole thing. It's based on, which is that every day we're practicing something. We might not realize it, but every day we're practicing something that our heart and our mind is built to learn. We're malleable. And human beings have known this for millennia through religion and spirituality and the contemplative arts. In our era, we have validated what we've known for generations through neuroscience and the concept of neuroplasticity. But essentially, if we spend our days being impatient, frustrated, rushed, we get really good at being impatient and frustrated and rushed and irritable. Yes. And if we find a way to practice being patient and kind and generous and compassionate, guess what? We get really good at being patient, kind, generous, compassionate. And so the key here is, when we hear that, oftentimes the way it goes in is, I need to be this kind of perfect being, You know, I need to sort of be this saint and never get irritated and, you know, never want anything for myself. That's the either or. That's the binary thinking. We think that patience means not feeling irritable. We think that courage means not feeling afraid. We think that generosity means never taking care of ourselves. We think that kindness means always smiling and being nice to everyone, when in fact, these qualities are much, much deeper, more rich and more complex, and actually give us a lot of room to be who we are fully. So patience includes being open to the irritation and the agitation we feel. Patience comes from the word patient, to be a patient. It gives us the opportunity to study the places where we are ailing inside rather than to avoid them or paper over them. You know, kindness includes being able to say no and set limits.
Yes. Yes. And that's so true that we do. Yes, I'm annoyed every morning that, you know, this morning we have smoke again. Oh, right. Gosh, here we go. Now my whole day is focused mm-hmm. around that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I think that I think it was chapter two. You were talking about you had Lyme disease. You were caring for a parent. Mm-hmm. You had dropped down into complete despair and you were never going to recover and the world was ending. Yeah. Now, that's not what you said, but that's what I took.
Right. Yeah. 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 Feeling sorry for myself lying on the couch in my father's house in New Jersey.
Yeah. And I mean, who hasn't been there? I mean, totally. We can relate to that in some way. We've all been there at some point.
Yeah.
But what you said was, then you remembered your training.
Yeah.
And then you were like, oh, it's how I relate to this.
Yeah.
And that's so important. And how can we do that? And is it really just bringing a little curiosity, you know, to quote Byron Katie, is it true?
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know,
yeah.
Is this really what's going on here?
Yeah. Yeah. How can we do it? And that's really the invitation of the book. And definitely curiosity is one doorway, getting curious. But what I love about the work that I do, the conversations I get to have with people and about the book is that I don't think there's any one right way. There are many doors to growth, healing, transformation, and becoming an engaged member of our society. And so the book is really trying to provide people with options. Where is it that you want to grow? What do you need to strengthen your heart so that you can live the life you want to live? So there's this progression of chapters, but really my vision for how people use this book is that they flip through the table of contents and they see, you know, oh God, rest. I need more rest. Please jump to chapter 18. Like, you know, give me permission that it's okay, right? To slow down and take a break. Or, you know, how am I possibly going to rest between childcare and two jobs and, you know, taking care of the aging parents? It's like, I hardly have a moment for myself. And it's like, oh, I can close my eyes on the bus for a minute. Oh, I can just put my phone down and look at the tree outside. Oh, it can be 10 or 20 seconds. It doesn't have to be an hour or two. So fundamental to whatever doorway we walk through, fundamental is this understanding that every day, if we know how to train our heart and mind, we can grow stronger, more resilient, and more flexible. And that these qualities, these potentials or capacities that we have as human beings, which we've been talking about, things like courage, aspiration, compassion, integrity, forgiveness, these are potent seeds of transformation that exist in each of us. Mm. And that the invitation is to pay attention to what seeds are we watering inside, which ones are we growing? And that with practice, instead of these things just popping up randomly like weeds in the yard, and it's like, oh, that one's pretty. That's a nice flower there. And oh, what's this one over here? It's all prickly and thorny. You know, these things occur randomly as states when the conditions come together, but through practice, we can actually cultivate them into baseline traits. They become part of our character. They become part of how we live and how we orient to ourselves and others and the world.
And that beautifully takes us back to practice, people, practice. Because if we don't practice, if we don't continue to look at things, we stay, we dig these ruts in the road that we are no longer able to leave unless we look at it and really get curious about why am I doing this way and where does this come from? And to be able to nurture things that we want to develop by giving them more attention.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And the book is meant to be practical. It's not just theoretical, right? So every chapter has a reflection, a meditation, suggestions on action, how to live into these qualities and engage them in our lives. And then also some tips on what to do when we hit difficulties and how to work with the challenges that come up as we practice.
Yeah, and that's extremely important. And I love that the book is designed in such a way that it isn't, I have to sit down and read the whole thing in one, you know, I'm going to sit, you can't read it in one sitting because it's very rich. But if you did, you would not be instantly healed.
Right.
You really need to figure out what is it that I'm needing right now from this book, and then explore that and stay with it for a little while, not just read it and be done.
Yeah.
And I think that that is an invitation to really dig into what is filling your heart and what's starving your heart as well.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I so enjoyed my glimpse at the book. I have not read the entire book. I'm guilty, but I skipped around and found some amazing things that are going to take me a lot of time to think about. And I love that.
That's
I really
great.
Appreciate it, Oren. Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. Yeah. Well, it's been a real, both a joy and a challenge to write. I was just talking with someone else about it earlier this morning, and I wrote the book. I started writing the book in 2020 when so much life was hitting the fan. When the pandemic started and George Floyd was murdered, and out here out west we had the devastating wildfire season, and we had that day where you couldn't see the sky or the sun, and that orange, eerie orange sky. And so I started just by writing these reflections on different qualities that I thought would be supportive to people for all that we were living through. And then that developed and deepened into the intention to write a whole book on how do we actually cultivate and train ourselves to realize our potential and to be more effective in all these different levels in our life, personally, relationally, socially. And the book pushed me in a few different ways. You know, intellectually, as you said at the beginning of our conversation, it's really drawing from a lot of different traditions and resources and history. And so I consulted with a colleague of mine who's a nonviolent scholar to draw examples from history. Did I say that earlier? Was that during this conversation? I did. Okay. So I'm repeating myself. But then personally, you know, we got pregnant and had a child during the time that I was writing the book. Did I go through all this earlier?
No.
Okay. Yeah. I was talking about the book so often, I forget who I said what to. And then my father passed away, as well during the process of editing the book, during the first year of our child's life. And so, I was really practicing, you know, with all of these qualities while I was writing it and really looking very deeply into, you know, what does it mean, say, you know, to practice with joy while we're grieving? How do those fit together? What does it mean to be patient when, you know, our infant is screaming at 3 a.m. and won't go back to sleep? So I feel really grateful just that I had the opportunity to explore and reflect in these ways, and then to share it with you and with others.
Yeah, and it really is. It's a very human book, and you know, sometimes we will read these books that are heavily researched, and it's like, okay, I'm going to read this page today. But yours is more of a dive in and explore, and you have the reflections, and there are meditations, and there's a lot of depth there for people to dig into, and I think they're really going to love the book.
Thanks, Janet.
Yeah. So why don't you tell people where they can get it? It's at Shambhala.
Yeah. So folks can get 30% off the book and a free guided meditation series if they pre-order it through my website, orinjsofer.com. It's also available anywhere books are sold, Barnes & Noble, Amazon, IndieBooks. And then if people want to connect, I would love that. I have a newsletter. I send one or two emails a week, depending on how busy I am taking care of our son. Sorry, one or two emails a month, depending on how busy I am. Working and taking care of our son. You can sign up on my website. And then I am on social media a little bit at Orin J. Sofer.
Wonderful. And last question is, are you going to be teaching from the book?
Absolutely. Yeah. Most of my teaching, I'm still teaching my online classes on Say What You Mean and mindful communication. This year will be the last year I teach those live. And by the time this airs, I think the first part of the series will be underway. But the second and third will be opening up next year. And all of my other events will be centered around the book. And the plan is for the year after next in 2025 to put together a series of online courses to take folks through the book in a very kind of careful and systematic way.
I'm sure that's going to be very welcome. It's been a pleasure as always. And I will make sure and put all the links so that people can find you and the book and learn more, because I think they're going to love it. Thanks again. Bye-bye. Thanks for tuning in for another episode of Mindful Social. It's been so great to see the subscriptions growing, and the feedback has really helped me make the show even better. So if you know somebody who needs to be on the show, email me at janet@janetfouts.com. And please send me feedback there too, or post a review on the podcast platform you're listening on. Oh, and do me a favor. Share this show on social media or with a friend. Thank you.